In the Course in Miracles workbook, on page 337, the one we're going to be on tonight, lesson 181. I trust my brothers who are one with me. I trust my brothers who are one with me. Trusting your brothers is essential to establishing and holding up your faith and your ability to transcend doubt and lack of sure conviction in yourself. Trusting in your brothers is essential to establishing and holding up your faith and your ability to transcend doubt and lack of sure conviction in yourself. When you attack a brother, you proclaim that he's limited by what you have perceived in him, which means you do not look beyond his errors. Rather, his errors are magnified, becoming blocks to your awareness of the self that lies beyond your own mistakes and past his seeming sins as well as yours. So then, if we want to transcend doubt and fear, which is lack of conviction in ourselves, trusting each other is going to be essential. And the Course says that when you attack somebody, what you're simply doing is proclaiming that that person is limited by what you see in them. So to attack somebody simply is to believe that you are limited by what I see in you, that I think that you are what I see in you. And that means that you're not really looking beyond the person's mistakes. Really, what you're really doing is magnifying the mistakes that you think that person is making. And so since you focus in on their mistakes, then that blocks your awareness of the holy self, the healing self, the real self that lies beyond your own mistakes and his mistakes too. So when I attack you, I'm limiting you to what I think you are. I focus totally on what it is I think I'm upset about to the point that I lose complete awareness of your identity as love and as a child of God, which also keeps me from recognizing my own power too. If I think you can be limited by what I see in you, I'm going to also think I can be limited by what I see in me. So to attack you is to limit you to what I think you are. You got it with that? You guys got that? Okay. So then he says perception has a focus, and it's the focus that we have that gives consistency to what we see. So basically, if you just change your focus, then what you see will change accordingly. And I used this example yesterday. If I'm focusing on these eyeglasses and that represents the person's mistake and I consistently focus on the eyeglasses, well, I see the eyeglasses all the time. If I focus on your mistake, all I do is focus on what I'm upset about you, what I don't like about you, is that going to be what I see all the time? Okay, then it says, well, what I need to do is change my focus, and then when I change my focus, what I see will change. So basically what we're being told is what you're seeing is what you're focusing on, and what you are experiencing in another person is what you are focusing on, and what you're focusing on is keeping you from seeing the real self that the Course keeps talking about that's blocked by your focus on what it is that you think is that mistake or that error, what's upsetting you. And that also programs me not to look past my mistakes either. Because my mind is going to apply to me everything I apply to you. And the question is about that paragraph.
So if someone's attacking us, we look at it in a reciprocal
manner. What does that mean?
Well, we know that their attack on us is their perception of us.
Right. They also they have a limited perception of you that they're focusing on to the exclusion of how sweet you are. The truth is that they can really see you, completely see you, they just being just in love with you, be dying to canvas. But right now they're focusing on what they think that is your mistake. They don't see anything else but that, and that's what the course is saying, that your perception has a focus. And it's what you're focusing on is giving consistency to what you see, because you're seeing it all the time, because you're focusing on it all the time. And when you change your focus, you'll see something else. Anybody else? Any questions or comments about what we've said so far? So when you change your focus on what you want to see, the Course says your vision now will shift to give support to the intent, which is to place the one that you have before. I'm going to take it sentence by sentence. So what is vision shifting? You can tell your vision has shifted because now you're giving support to your new goal that's replaced your old goal. So I have to have a new goal to see a new you, and then my vision will support that new goal just like my vision used to support that old goal. So you have to remove your focus on your brother's sins. You have to remove your focus on the other person's mistakes, and then you experience the peace that comes from faith and sinlessness. When I stop focusing on everything about you that upsets me, then I'll experience the peace. Hello?
Hello?
Hello? So that's about the Course in Miracles. Because it's so sane. Then you realize that, again, it's just a matter of the Course, it's just a matter of willingness. All of a sudden you realize, I hear what you're saying, Earl, and I see the logic of it, and I see how it could actually work that way. But you know what? I won't attack that joker, so I'm not going to change the way I see things. Really, that's what it's going to boil down to, is with the Course in Miracles, and that's why people sometimes throw it away. Because it'll boil down to, I just don't want to change my focus. Okay, then it says that this faith in sinlessness receives its only sure support from what you see in others past their sin. So if I want to have faith, then it's going to receive its support and what I see in you beyond your mistakes. So if I want to have faith in you, Judy, that faith is going to come from me focusing on things about you more than what I don't like about you.
Thank God.
Yeah, I'll say it again. If I want to get the faith that will allow me to have peace, I'm going to have to focus on the things about you other than what I want to focus on as the mistake that you're making that I'm focusing on, to the point that I don't see nothing else about you but what I'm upset about you. Okay? Then it says, because their mistakes, if focused on, and this is the cool part, say if you focus on their mistakes, it's just going to be a witness to the sins of mistakes in you. And so you will not transcend their sight, and you will see the, and you won't see the innocence or the sinlessness that lies beyond. So, to me, my motivation comes from knowing that if I constantly focus on your mistakes, then your mistakes are going to eventually witness to my mistakes all the time, and then I'll just see what's wrong with me, and I'll also just be seeing what's wrong with you. And if we'll be honest about ourselves, that's the way the average person is. They'll tell you what's wrong with everybody around them, and they also just as hard on themselves as they are on everybody else. They'll also not be tooting their own horn either. I don't know about you, but I don't meet many people every day that tell me, I'm a loving, brilliant, wonderful person. Aren't you glad you know me? It's almost like everybody takes pride in putting themselves down in self-debasement. It's almost like the more pitiful I can tell you I am, the more humble I am, and therefore the more sweet I am. So it's just the opposite. We feel like putting ourselves down somehow makes us great people, and if you dare say you're a wonderful person, you're being arrogant. And then we focus on everybody else's sins, but then come to think of it, all I do is focus on mine too. Just like the book says. That's what I like about this book. Everything it says, you can see yourself doing it right then. You don't even have to act like this book is abstract. It's exactly what we're experiencing in the world. This book is always talking about exactly what we're experiencing in the world. That's why I love it. That's why it's so doggone powerful to me. Yeah.
So if I change my focus as a person, then will that change my perception about me?
Absolutely. We're so codependent that we got a path of codependent people. And the path of codependent people is the way I treat you is the way I'm ultimately end up treating me. You know, yeah. If I train my mind to look beyond the mistakes in you to the truth and the love that's in you, then my mind is going to automatically look beyond the mistakes in me to the truth and love in me. And then I'm going to see stuff about me that makes me feel peace about me. And the more peace I feel about me, the more peace I'm going to feel about you, because it's only basically people who are already unhappy that's always judging and criticizing and condemning others anyway. It's coming from their own miserable life. If they were happy, they wouldn't be so busy criticizing everybody else. So the minute I get past my own mistakes to the peace that's in me, as a matter of fact, I value that peace so much, I won't even make you important enough to make me take my peace away because of you. My peace will be so valuable to me that I won't let you take my peace away. Because it feels so much better than my misery. And if I had a choice between feeling miserable and feeling good, I'm going to go with feeling good. So I'm not going to let you make me feel bad. I have that power. I can decide what influences me. And that's mind-boggling when you realize that.
Yeah.
You might not be able to control everything outside of you, but you sure can determine how you feel about it.
Mm-hmm.
That's where the power is located.
Yeah.
Cool. Anybody else? Anybody else have any thoughts, any comments before I go further?
Does that mean how the person reacts to you as well, because of how you
great question. She said, does that in turn make them change the way they react to you? Not necessarily. No. Sometimes they'll be the same little butthole they always were. You'll just have more peace about their buttholiness. Yeah, their buttholiness. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? And then sometimes miraculously it'll look like they change because the way you look at them changed. But don't make your peace dependent on everybody else changing because you've decided to change your mind and you're setting yourself up. I always try to remember, Earl, you read the course, they didn't. So the responsibility of the change perception is on you, Earl, not on them. Your mama didn't come to the class tonight, so don't think your mama going to be different when you go home after the class. But you're supposed to have different tools. For instance, you're supposed to go home tonight and try not to focus on everything about your mama that blocks the love that you could see in your mama. You would want to try to change your focus. So what you would do from the class is go home and try to change your focus. Then that would be you doing the course. It wouldn't be expecting your mama to change. Funny thing about it, though, is that in most cases, when you change your perception, it does look like miraculously everybody else around you changed. But don't make that a condition to judge whether or not you are doing it right. You see what I mean? Yeah, they might change, but hey, you know something? They might not. They might not. But my experience is there are 1,000% more peaceful people in my life now than there was when I first started this book. That's all I can tell you, is that there just don't seem to be people who are giving me a hard time in my life. As a matter of fact, there is no one. Period. Nowhere. Not a relative, not an acquaintance, not nobody.
Hallelujah.
No one. And I live in the world. Just like y'all. But I could have given you the longest list you could have imagined 25 years ago. And it don't take 25 years for you to do that. You would get the same result that I'm getting today if you did the same thing the book is saying do today. You know what I'm saying? I could have been flicking the light switch on for 25 years to turn that light on. You could walk in here tonight for the first time and flick that switch and the light will come on.
Yeah.
It didn't take you 25 years. You follow what I'm saying?
Yeah.
If you apply the truth now, you get the result now. You don't get the result sometime in the future according to the course. You get it now. But if you apply it, you get it now. I love that.
Yeah.
I love that. That it works. It always works when you use it.
We need to hear that. Thanks a lot.
That's why I'm working out of the book so hard right now, because I know that there's not one single thing I'm going to say is more brilliant than what's on this page. And the greatest favor I could do everybody in here is to say what's on this page and then kind of go deeper and making it easier to hear, because there's something about the course that when you hear it in a group, for some reason you hear it. And I could be reading directly out of the book and you'll hear it. And you could swear you just read the same thing by yourself and it didn't make any sense whatsoever. Because it's all about joining. That's the whole purpose of it. It's trying to get us to join. So why wouldn't we get the reward of joining? So I got categories of people in my life. Then there would be people that, you know what? All I want to do is focus on you, the thing about you that makes me angry and upset. And that's just it right now. Maybe one day I'll change my focus, but right now I'm focusing on you being a bastard.
You don't do that, do you?
Not now. There's nobody that's so important to me that I want to feel miserable all the time. Mm-hmm.
So that means if you do that, that they're important to you?
It means if you do that, they become an idol. They become something that's more important to you than your own peace is to you. Mm-hmm. And that's the Course definition of an idol. Mm-hmm. So you make them an idol. And the Course says an idol is a false impression that you'd rather believe about somebody more than what they really are as a spiritual being. So an idol is a false idea about a person that I want to be true to the extent that I will focus on nothing else about them but what it is that I see as their sin. The only problem with that is that when I make a mistake, when I do something crazy, I'm going to be just as hard on myself as I was on them. My mind is going to apply that same attitude toward me, and then I lose sight of who I really am too. So we have to use the law of self-preservation to our advantage. We have to go, I'm going to look out for myself. How do I look out for myself? Well, Earl, the way you look out for yourself is changing your focus from a person's mistakes to wanting to see who they are beyond their mistakes so that you can see who you are beyond your mistakes, therefore get in touch with your power and your love, which therefore will take care of you and protect you and manifest your happiness. So in the name of your own happiness, change your focus on your daddy. You're not doing it for your daddy. You're doing it for you. Because you're not going to do it for your daddy. You don't even like your daddy. So you're not going to be trying to make your daddy feel better. Else I wouldn't have a grievance with my daddy in the first place. So it isn't even about my daddy. It's about me getting clear about what that grievance is doing to me. And when I get clear about what it's doing to me, I'll let it go. And guess what? My daddy, it's really going to be the same way my daddy always was. My daddy was still loved. My daddy was still innocent. My daddy was still my daddy even when I was mad at him. The only thing that's happened is now I'm not attacking myself anymore about my daddy. So who I just released was me.
That's cool.
You see what I'm saying? My daddy might not ever change, but I'm not going to beat myself up for the rest of my life because of my daddy. Because my daddy don't feel none of the pain that I have about how my daddy treated me. My daddy doesn't feel it. I've never walked into a room with a really bad stomach ache and had anybody in that room walk up to me and say, I have a really bad stomach ache that I'm feeling as your stomach ache. So when people walk up to me and they tell me they're feeling my feelings, I know that that's not true. If that was true, you'd be feeling my stomach ache, you'd be feeling my indigestion, you'd be feeling my headache. You don't feel none of those things. So you're not feeling my feelings. You're feeling your feelings and you're projecting them on me. That's what you're feeling. So the next time somebody comes to you and they tell you they're feeling something that you're feeling, they just feeling what they're feeling, and they're projecting it on you. And if you happen to feel the same thing, you might fall for it and believe they actually felt you. But they didn't. Else, why don't they feel the other things you feel? Why are your psychic powers only working about this but not about that? The truth is, the Course says that the biggest the thing that we don't realize is that we give and receive the feelings that we have to ourselves. So I give myself the feeling that I have about you, and then I'll say, you made me have that feeling. Or I say, I felt that from you. And the truth is, there was something about you that made me give myself some joy and some love. And then I'll say, God, I really feel your love for me. No, I feel my love for you. And I'm saying, I feel your love for me. Do you know when you look back on past experiences and you think about people you knew in the past, all you are remembering is your reaction to them? You're not remembering their reaction to you. You don't really know how they were really reacting to you. You just remember how you felt about them. Oh, boy, I really enjoyed so-and-so. We had a wonderful time together. And you go back to your mind and think about the picnic that y'all had together that was just awesome. And you don't know that at that very same picnic, they might have been in misery every second they were sitting up there with you pretending that they was enjoying the picnic and they would have rather been at the movie. But in your mind, it's a totally fond memory because all you're remembering is your reaction to them. And when you remember, and when you think about that, it kind of freaks you out about all of your past. You really realize you don't really know how most of the people in your life felt about any time they really had with you. All you remember is how you reacted to them. The truth is, you know, could be taken either way. You know, like you could see that both ways, right? But have you ever wondered why somebody did not want to ever see you again who you enjoyed? You know what I'm saying? You can't wait to get back with them. They don't want to see you at all. That's obviously your remembrance and your reaction to them is totally different from their reaction to you. So you're only remembering how you felt about them. They're telling you how they felt about you by the restraining order. They're also letting you know what their reaction was to you. Call the police. I do not want to be around you anymore. You know, that's deep. This book is freaky. I'm telling you, if you read The Course in Miracles, you'll never be the same. If you want to be in the ignorance is bliss state, put this book down and run for your life. If you want to stay asleep, it's like the what was that in Matrix, the red pill and the blue pill. Which one was the wake-up pill? The blue one or the red one?
I think it was the red one, wasn't it?
Whichever one was the wake-up pill.
Yeah.
You know, you're taking the wake-up pill when you study the Course in Miracles.
That's for
sure. I swear you are. Yeah, if you want to stay ignorant, leave it alone.
That was a little willingness.
Yeah. Only difference is in the Matrix, they made reality look like crap.
Yeah.
That was the only problem I had with it. You know, I wouldn't have blamed nobody on that movie for not wanting to stay asleep in that movie. Because who want to wake up in some tanker being chased by metal things that's trying to destroy you and mess you out? You know, like, I think I'd rather stay in the dream that I'm driving a Porsche down the street, you know what I'm saying? Keep leaving me asleep. And that's where most, and I remember being a kid in the ghetto, sometimes doing my homework by a kerosene lamp because the bills wasn't paid, because my father was an alcoholic at that time and wasn't taking care of us the way he should. I did a good story, didn't I? So, I remember going to sleep and my dreams would be so beautiful and so wonderful and so awesome that when I would wake up, I'd be disappointed. And some of y'all know exactly what I mean. You wake up and you go, oh, hell, I'm still here. You know, I wish I was back asleep. You know what I'm saying? And that's the truth. The Course is saying most people, their reality is so unhappy that the only time they find joy is in fantasy. So when you take a person's fantasies away, they feel like you've taken away the only joy that they have because they made their reality so miserable. And the Course is saying reality is totally happy. It's the fantasy that's causing you pain. You're having a fantasy of not being loved. You're having a fantasy of being alone. You're having a fantasy of being guilty. You're having a fantasy of being a body. You're having a fantasy of being separate. You're having a fantasy of being able to be killed and hurt. You're having a fantasy. That's the fantasy, because nothing that loves you would have created you in a reality where you could even be accidentally harmed. It wouldn't even be necessary for you to look out for yourself and make sure you wasn't hurt. Something that loved you would make it beyond the possibility that you could be hurt, even if you try. That's real love.
Wow.
And that's the kind of stuff this book says. And I go, you know, I've always felt that in my heart, but nobody ever said it out loud. I've always felt that, but I never read it before. If you really love me, God, you just wouldn't even put me somewhere I could be hurt. Mm-hmm. Accidentally. I wouldn't be here trying to look out for myself. So, why do I see all this stuff that upsets me? Well, because I have a focus. What am I focusing on? I'm focusing on everything I see. How long will I see what I see? As long as you focus on it. I'm always curious as to why the Course creates the different reactions. Okay, so tell me, share with me why that would make you feel guilty instead of free.
When I was reading this, I wrote, I want to see myself as a person
who
can change my focus about this person.
Okay.
And all of a sudden, my ego kicks up and he goes, see, you can't do it right. You're never going to be able to change your focus about that person because you're always going to be holding on to this idea about him, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's not practical. No one can do this.
Mm-hmm.
It makes you guilty. See, I'm not doing it. I can't do it right.
Mm-hmm.
Although it just kicks up a really hard, big guilt thing. This thing does. I don't know why. Because it's like, what's the point? I'm never going to be doing it. It sounds like you're making somebody perfect or something.
Mm-hmm. Wasn't that great?
Uh-huh.
Anybody have all of those thoughts come up and stuff?
And then it just goes right into guilt and it just starts to cycle. You know, and then I just stop.
And then,
I'm not guilty.
Now check this out.
But it doesn't seem real to me. You tell myself it doesn't seem true.
But you could not have faith in gravity and it still wouldn't make you fall up when you jumped off this church. So your belief has nothing to do with something that's true. Something isn't true because you believe it is. So whether or not you believe what you're saying is true doesn't necessarily make it not true because you don't believe it's true even though you're saying it.
Yeah.
You follow what I'm saying? It doesn't matter whether you believe you're lying to yourself when you tell yourself you're innocent, because you're innocent whether you believe it or not. So your belief about whether or not you're innocent has nothing to do with your innocence. But your enjoyment of your innocence has everything to do with your belief. So you're innocent, brother. You're innocent if you think that's the biggest poppycock that someone could ever say to you. Now, what the course is doing is trying to help you let go of any block that will keep you from recognizing that. You just pointed out the block that keeps you from recognizing that, which is what the book just said, what you were focusing on. You were focusing on what? This doesn't work. You have to be perfect. I'm guilty. See what I'm saying? It was your focus you was just describing to me. And by you focusing on that, it was keeping you from seeing the innocent self that I'm talking about that's on the other side of what you're telling yourself.
So just switch focus on me.
I got to switch over to another focus. Now check this out. He says your willingness to change your focus will help to generate the faith you need to do it. So your willingness to change your mind will help generate the faith that allow you to do it. Because if I'm willing to change my mind, that's going to help give me the faith to do it. Because I want to. And the fact that I want to is going to help me develop the faith to do it. Because I want to. See the difference? See, people try to get the faith first and then think they're going to get the thing they want. Of course, it doesn't work like that. First, you have to be willing to have the thing. And then your willingness to have it will generate the faith you need to do it. So focus on your willingness to have it rather than the faith. Huh.
But you have to focus. It's not just that one thing,
because
it leads to another focus.
Right. To another focus. And then, finally, you stop focusing up all the time. You know what I'm saying?
All the did was change a channel to another thing I got to look at.
There we go. Just as real.
Just as real, but it's still, you know, the focus. When I focused, I just switched to these facets, and I didn't like that person, so I didn't like that thought, so I didn't like the next one that followed. Focus.
There you go.
Focus.
And then the Course says in another part of the book, well, what is it that makes me not want to change my focus? Aha, good question, isn't it? What is it that makes me about some people not want to change their focus? Here's the answer. I have an imagined need to attack them. I'll say it again. I don't want to change my focus because I want to attack you. That's why I don't want to change my focus, because my focus is what's giving me the justification for attacking you. So if I took away the focus, then it would be no justification for my attack. I want to attack, so it's got to be a reason. So I got to keep focusing on the reason for me to attack you, because I want to.
Does that relate to you attacking yourself?
Exactly. Anything I said is also the same game you running down on yourself. Yeah. You focus on your flaws so you can keep attacking yourself all the time, because you think by attacking yourself all the time, you're paying off some kind of a debt that allow you to be okay again, because as a child, I don't know about you, but I got spankings, and when I got my spanking, me and my mama was okay. So when I got my punishment, the slate was clean, I could go right back outside and do it again. Okay, which is what I just said. So we are giving ourselves the spanking that our parents used to give us. Only now we are doing it to ourselves. So we punish ourselves until we are now a father of the guilt, because we suffered enough to be okay again. And so when you're talking to someone who wants to punish themselves, they never hear your advice until they're at the point that they're ready to pardon themselves, or they feel like they've suffered enough. And then when they've suffered enough, miraculously they begin to hear the answer and do something different, because they had already concluded with their sentence. I sentenced myself to 6 months of guilt because of what I cheated on my mate. So now I've got to suffer for 6 months. So in that whole 6 month period, I will not really hear that I'm innocent. I will not really hear I made a mistake. I will not really hear there's another way to look at it. I won't hear anything that's going to make me change, because I sentenced myself to 6 months. I'm focusing on my 6 months. 6 months are up now. All of a sudden, Earl, I heard what you said about that, and now I'm ready to let myself be happy again. And I'm trying to say the governor has pardoned you.
Yeah.
You are paroled.
Yes, because
some people give themselves a life sentence. And that's, guess what? Being in the body is a life sentence.
It is.
It is.
I think
it's a life sentence. We gave ourselves a life sentence of being in the body. We're so afraid of our unlimited nature and what we might do or what we did the last time with it that we sentence ourselves to a limited perception of ourselves as physical human beings who are a victim of everything around them until we die. And then you've done your time. And then there are beings that go, whoa, wait a minute, this is insane. I think I want to be happy. I think I want to get out of what I've chosen myself. I want another way of looking at this. Boom, then all of a sudden, spirit goes, well, great. I'm going to now give you another way to look at another focus for you to have while you're in the body, and this focus will bring you joy, and it will take you beyond the limited perception you have of yourself. But this focus is different from what you've learned, so you're going to have to be open to being told some things that's totally opposite to what you believe. But if you're so invested in your way of seeing things that all you want to do is defend it, then why bother to change? If you're going to spend all your time defending against the new ideas that will free you, why don't you just go ahead and suffer in peace and leave everybody alone? You know what I'm saying? If I can give you a way out and all you want to do is defend your position, then why don't you just be honest with yourself and admit all you want to do is attack? And that's why you're looking for justification for your attack. That's why you're not getting excited about anything that says change your focus.
Yeah.
You're going to tell yourself, does that mean you're just going to let somebody run all over you? Does that mean you're just going to be a doormat? You're going to come up with everything other than, you know, today I'm going to work on my willingness to focus on something besides the mistake that I'm using to bring myself hell. You know, you see what I'm saying? You know, don't defend attack. Please don't raise your hand to ask me a question to defend attack. I will tell you, every time you ask me, there is no justification for attack. Is there a desire to attack?
Yeah.
Is there a feeling that people deserve attack? Hell yeah! But that don't have nothing to do with it actually being justified in spiritual law. Just because, as a human, I think I'm justified in attacking. Are you with me?
Yeah.
I mean, that's just a fact. Deanne, you had your hand up first. Okay. Yeah, brother.
This isn't about attack, I don't think. There are those people who seem to think that life is hunky dory.
Yeah.
I work with a woman who just everything's positive.
Yeah.
So if life is a sentence, because we all have to wake up, what is she getting that I'm not?
She's not getting anything, you're not. Okay. You're getting the same thing she's getting, only she's seeing it and you're not.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying?
Okay.
Her focus is on hunky-dory.
Okay.
Your focus is on whatever it is that's not making you feel hunky-dory.
So she's getting it more than I'm getting it.
She's focusing on it more than you're focusing on it.
Okay.
That's all it means.
Okay.
And you know what I mean? So you got the same choice to change your focus just like she does. But I guarantee you this, she probably doesn't see things hunky-dory all the time either.
Yeah.
You know, she probably has her moments where she's focusing on what lesson brings her lesson joy too. But obviously she's not doing it as much.
She doesn't show it as much, right?
Yeah, and she may really be focusing on the things in her life she's grateful for. Because if you focus on the things you're grateful for, you're guaranteed to feel hunky-dory most of the time. I guarantee you, if you just go, you know, I'm glad that I got a car to go to work every day in. If you just went, you know, today I'm glad that I can open up my refrigerator and there's stuff to drink and stuff to eat and I got a lounge chair and I can kick back and I even got TiVo. You know, the techno fields know what TiVo is. It's a VCR on steroids. Okay? It records what it thinks you like. It don't just record what you tell it to. It'll keep up with your habits and just record the stuff you like. Even if you're not there, or if you got a favorite actor and you put in your actor, then anything that your actor is in is coming on TV, it'll automatically record it for you. So when you come home, your actor, all the stuff with your, I mean, it's, yeah, it's called TiVo. It pauses live action. You watching something on TV and you got to go to the toilet, you can pause it right there while you're watching it live. Go and come back and start back where you left off. and you see where you left off. I mean, it's, you know, and what and this is what this is actually what's happening at a psychic, spiritual, metaphysical level too. It's the exact same thing. We're constantly recording everything that's really happened to us, looking at what we recorded, overlooking that there's a present beyond the thing that we recorded. Because while I'm watching this program that was recorded of something that occurred in the past, when am I doing it? In the now. So there's a now that's happening that I'm not even a part of because I'm busy watching something that happened a long time ago. That's what the Course says that we're doing. We're in a now that's fresh and clean with an opportunity for us to be and do anything we want to, but we're spending all that time watching the recording that we made since we've been born and then projecting that recording into our future and then reliving it over and over again like playing the same tape over and over and over again. Watch Groundhog Day. Rent that movie. Groundhog Day is one of the best metaphysical spiritual movies that's ever been made. It's called Groundhog Day. You haven't seen it? How many of y'all seen it?
I haven't.
You now get what I'm talking about? He kept reliving the same thing over and over again until he knew what was going to happen before it happened, and so he was able to start avoiding it. That's the way we are. You all know your pattern. So the next time your pattern shows up, you actually have the choice of not doing what you've done before. Because you know what's going to happen when you're in a relationship.
Oh, God.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah. You know your financial pattern as soon as you take your credit card out.
Yeah.
So you're breaking your financial pattern would be keeping it in your pocket.
Yeah.
See, we all know our patterns. It's not about changing your pattern so much as, number one, making peace with your pattern. I don't know about you, but I got some patterns I've been trying to change since I was 12 years old. Those patterns have not changed. What's changed is the way I feel about my patterns. And when I changed the way I feel about my patterns, I had the peace that I was looking for by trying to change my patterns. When I took responsibility for my patterns, I started to have the peace I thought I was going to have when I changed my patterns. So let's spend so much time trying to change your patterns and learning how to use your pattern to your advantage and how to use your pattern to wake you up and how to use your pattern to bring you peace, and how to use your pattern to give you another opportunity to feel innocent about the way that you express yourself. Because if you be honest with yourself, it's not useless so much you have a problem with your pattern as the people you in your relationship have a problem with your pattern. Think about it.
Yeah.
Most people are always trying to change themselves for someone else. If you were to leave them alone, they would be perfectly okay with sitting in front of the TV with a beer checking out a TV show that they like. It's their partner that says, you slob, you ought to get off the sofa and take me out. You understand what I'm saying? The average person is pretty much okay with themselves. It's just that they tend to form relationships with people who want them to change. And then they start thinking that there's something wrong with them. And there's nothing wrong with you at all. You're okay. Are you killing anybody? No. Who's the last time you mugged somebody? Never. You know, well, what are you doing? What is it about you that's so bad that really needs to be changed? Are you trying to inflict harm on all mankind? No. So tell me what it is about you that needs to be changed. Well, I think I watch too much TV. Okay. But that doesn't make you a bad person. It doesn't make you less perfect. It doesn't make you less loving. You're okay. Start from, I am okay. Then make the change from, I'm okay, but I think I'd like to see this differently. I'm okay, but I think I'd like to try it this way now. I'm okay, but I wonder what it'd be like if I jogged every morning. I'm okay now, but I always wanted to try yoga. I think I'm going to do yoga because I'm going to make myself a perfect, better person. I'm going to learn how to do this so I can make myself a better person. You're already a great person trying to give yourself a multidimensional experience. So you're a great person saying, can I experience this that I haven't experienced before? And what would it be like if I became a vegetarian? Or would it be cool? You see what I'm saying? If I went out to do art. You know, I'm a great person trying different things. I'm not trying different things so I can become a great person.
God.
You're up there.
You are up, baby.
That's the truth. That's the truth. Yes. Thank you, Judy. Thank you. I have a tendency to show even more love to the people who appreciate me. I don't know why, but that's just the way my nature is. Is yours like that, too?
Yeah.
You'd be amazed how much more you would receive from people around you if you let them see your appreciation of them. Because we are not nearly as hesitant about showing our disapproval and upset with people as we are about showing our approval and gratitude. A person will let you know in a hot second what they're upset with you about, but they'll sit back and never tell you what they appreciate about you.
Totally.
And that's backwards as hell.
Bullshit.
It is. It's total. It's total, 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 total. Somebody said, well, he has been for a long time.
You left me way back.
Yeah.
My question is about the attack.
Mm-hmm.
Is there a defense?
The defense is what creates the attack. And the thing to keep in, the thing to keep in mind is that the greatest defense against attack is peace. If you have a vibration of peace, if you have a mind focused on peace, if all you're about is peace, then you attract peace. So the best way to have peace is to be it.
Jesus says, "Turn the other cheek." He was about peace, but he says, "I'm going to turn the other cheek."
Mm-hmm. Well, Jesus knew who he was, so Jesus knew he wasn't that body that was hanging on the cross that got crucified.
No, before that, during his preaching.
Right. That's what I'm saying. Jesus was a being who came here fully realized about what his purpose was, and when I read the Bible, what I thought was so interesting is that from the very beginning, he told everybody exactly what was going to happen to him and why he was born. He said it over and over again, you know, basically, I'm here to show, as the poet said, I'm here to show that truth can't be destroyed. And the way that's going to happen is it's going to look like I'm going to be destroyed, and I'm going to come back and show you I wasn't destroyed. So part of me coming back and showing you I wasn't destroyed was me being destroyed, which I never understood why there was so much focus on the crucifixion and not on the resurrection, when the resurrection was the real deal, and the crucifixion is being used just to keep people feeling guilty. It's like, how far should I feel guilty about somebody who didn't die, who told me they came here to show me that I couldn't die by being tortured and still loving me, even though I was totally tortured, I show you I'm still capable of expressing love. So you are able to do the same thing, he says, in much less extreme situations. I was able to forgive even though nails were drawn through my hand. Certainly you can forgive because someone took your parking space.
Yeah.
Can you practice forgiveness in much less extreme temptations than I went through? He says in the Course in Miracles, I'm an extreme teaching example.
Yeah.
You know, I'm an extreme teaching example of love. You know, so the Course says, you know, turning the other cheek is just another way of saying changing your focus. That's just another, from a Course perspective, that it's not the classic definition of somebody's doing me wrong and I'm just going to be a doormat and let them do anything they want to me because I'm trying to be spiritual. It means I'm going to change my focus in this situation. I'm going to turn the other cheek. I'm going to turn my vision in another direction. Because when you turn your cheek, you turn your direction of seeing things. Turn the other cheek. I'm looking at it another way. We're being asked to look at it another way.
Mm-hmm.
That's what it really means.
Well, you're
in an attack situation, if I was physically attacked and someone was trying to kill me and love me right now. First thing I would hope that I had was the sanity to give them whatever it was they wanted, because there's nothing I could give them that I couldn't replace, and there's absolutely nothing that I would have on my physical being that's more important than my safety and my peace and my life.
So will you protect?
I wouldn't protect it, I'd give it away. See, protecting it, it's not like I'm protecting. I'm going to give away whatever it is they want.
Yeah, material.
Yeah, well, that's why they're mugging me. They're mugging me because there's an attack thought in my own mind that drew that to me in the first place.
Yeah.
If I want to make sure that don't happen again, then what I need to do in that situation is try to be as peaceful as I can be in that situation. Don't try to hold on to any illusionary thing like a watch or a wallet or a credit card or money. Let that fearful person get whatever it is they think they need as fast as they can get it so they can get away from me, and then I can go about manifesting it again in no time at all, because the one thing we can do is manifest stuff. All of us manifest stuff.
But your life is being threatened. They don't want to witness. They're going to corrupt you. Are you going to participate?
I don't know what I'm going to do in that situation. I don't know what I would do in that situation. I can tell you what my intention would be in that situation. But if I happen to have a machine gun nearby and I blow them away, then I want to forgive myself. That's what the Course is teaching me. No matter how I respond, then I need to learn how to see it differently. I need to learn how to love myself. I need to remember the truth. And I need to do whatever is necessary in my own consciousness that would prevent that from happening again. Because if I changed my mind, if I got in touch with myself as a spiritual being, I wouldn't even be in a situation where I would be attacked in the first place. That's coming from my unconsciousness. It's coming from my fear. It's coming from my guilt. It's coming from my thinking there's somebody out there who can get me. That's what made them show up in the first place. So what would I do in a situation like that? I would do whatever my level of consciousness tells me to do at that time. If I'm on a level of consciousness that says, see that person that's the Holy Son of God, and I can pull that off for real, then I probably have a miracle happening in that situation and they won't harm me at all. If I'm on a terrified level of consciousness where I feel like my well-being is at stake and there's a club nearby, I'm going to probably brain them as fast as I possibly can. But the one thing I know is whatever I do to them, it'll be exactly what they ask for. If I kill them, they ask to be killed. And if I forgave them, they ask to be forgiven. Because nothing happens to anybody that they don't attract to themselves at some level, whether they know it or not. That's deep. That's why you don't even try to start at that level. Because people who've been victimized, that's their greatest fear, is that what they happen to them, they have something to do with it. That's hard. That's hard to take. That's hardcore. So that's why the Course says don't even start there. It says that in the book. Don't even start with trying to believe that your thought created everything that happened to you. He says start at the idea that you don't know everything and there are some things that you could be taught that could free you. He says start there. Don't start at how did I create that. Start at I don't know everything and I'm willing to be shown another way of looking at it. But people go to how did I create that and then defend that thought of how I created that because that's the best way in the world to convince yourself to chuck the whole change in the first place.
Yeah.
See, that thought makes you so mad to go, who do you mean I attracted that? See, whew, this is crazy. All right, that's exactly what your ego wanted you to do. Your ego wanted to give you the most frightening thought that it could give you to give you the greatest amount of resistance so you could take this book and say, this is crap, and then go right back out with the same erroneous thought and continue to have attack for the rest of your life that you feel like somebody else is giving to you. This seems justified because it always will. It'll always seem like when you're a victim that you're justified in attacking your perpetrator. Always. So you stay in that vicious cycle of attack, defense, attack, defense, attack, defense. But then you go one day and you pick up a book like this, and in the truth book is going to say it, not just The Course in Miracles. It's going to say there's a connection between your consciousness and your reality and what you draw to you. Then the hardest thing is going to be in the world is going to be to take responsibility for your own experience, right?
Yeah.
So the Course says, okay, instead of starting at, I created the physical thing that's happened to me, start at, I'm the one that's making my own perceptions of everything that's happened to me. See that level? Every one of us can function at that level. Every one of us can jump to, you know what? Okay, I am responsible for the way that I see things. Then that's the level the Course works at. Because it knows that at the level of, I'm the one that attracted that mugging, it's not going to work with 99% of the people you would say it to, and they just go straight into resistance and defensiveness. Because it's so important to believe that we're victims in order to feel justified in our attitudes to attack. We like to attack. And we like to judge.
Yeah.
We do. Let's be honest, we love it. You know, I love it. I love finding something about somebody else that can make them seem like they're not as good as me. And that I got myself pulled together, or that I'm smarter, or I'm more spiritual. That's a part of me that just loves that. Don't a part of you love that?
Oh, I love
that. At least I'm better than them. You know, no matter what, at least I'm better. So that's a part of me that loves that. That's how I get the chance to be special. You know? But the truth is, you all are so totally loved that there's nothing you can possibly do that would ever make you lose that love. That love is loving you even in the middle of all the guilt and fear and anger and judgment that you do, and it's patiently waiting until you have had so much pain that you say there must be a better way and really be serious about it. So it doesn't interfere because it wants you to crash. This is a line in the Course says, every time you're miserable, In terms of seeing, is a paraphrase, every time you're miserable because one of your plans failed, heaven is glad. God is so glad when one of your plans flop. It's unbelievable. Because it's like every time you see that it's not the way you made it out to be, every time you see that you're being able to control anybody else, or every time that you see that trying to get without giving, every time you see that anything other than love doesn't work, you become closer to the time you're ready to really be happy and go home. You see what I mean? Every time you try to do something by yourself and it doesn't work out, the closer you are to being to that point that you would know that it's all about joining and connecting and getting in touch with a higher power. Every time you try something coming from your ego and it doesn't work, you're closer to that point that you're going to choose finally to really be happy one day. Every time you have a lousy relationship, you're closer to the day you're going to choose to really do relationships differently so you can have a cool one. Every time you go through bankruptcy, you're that much closer to when you're going to decide to do whatever is right in your financial perception of things in order for you to have financial peace. every time you fail, spirit is glad. Because you're that much closer to turning to spirit and not thinking you on your own got to do it by yourself. And every time someone fools you into thinking you can control them by doing what you want them to do, even if they don't want to do it, they are further deceiving you into thinking that you can manipulate other people into having in order to have what you want. So really it's the people that's giving in to your control that are really hurting you the most. And it's the people who are refusing to be anything other than who they really are that are your best friends. But we do it just the opposite.
I hope my boss.
You know. Yeah, well, it would be wonderful, but I'm telling you, the mere fact that you're sitting up here means that you are so close to choosing for your peace for real and choosing for your happiness for real that you are so close to having everything you ever wanted in your heart that it's hard for me to even just sit up here and just say this without jumping and screaming for joy. Because you don't get to the point you listen to A Course in Miracles until you've had a million illusions that didn't work out. And you're ready for the real deal now. People who still want to play around in the illusion do not hang around here very long.
That's for darn sure.
They don't. It's a difference between wanting a car and wanting the truth.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
it's a difference between wanting to manifest a house and wanting the truth. There's a difference between wanting your soulmate and wanting the truth. The Course says there are two different things. You can go to classes on visualization all day long and you can manifest. I promise you can do it. You can visualize something in your mind, say it over and over again, mix it with feeling, release it, and it will be drawn to you and it will be created. But if you hate yourself, you've just invented another way to make yourself miserable. That's all you manifested. You just manifested another way to make yourself miserable if you don't love yourself. And that's called creative visualization.
That's not very nice.
If you love yourself, then you've created something else that you're going to bring joy and peace to yourself through. So the conscious being wants to have the state of mind that would allow them to enjoy their manifestation. So they're going to work on their state of mind more than they're going to work on manifesting the car. Because they want to have the kind of mind that when they get the car, they can enjoy the car, pay for the car. Or if they hate themselves, they'll manifest the car they can't pay for. But they still manifest it. See the difference? So all of a sudden, your state of mind becomes more important than your physical manifestations because you know that to have a physical manifestation before you have the consciousness to accept it is misery.
Yeah, that's for sure.
So we're putting the horse before the cart. We're trying to get our minds right. Then we'll enjoy all the toys and trinkets of the world, as the Course calls it. And that, to me, that's a good deal. He says you're going to go from the miserable dream to the happy dream, right? The happy dream. Which will look like there's no lack in your life and everything is cool. He says, then you'll wake up because you're not going to be willing to go to the next level until you really have pleasure and joy in this one. If I have a good time with you in Denver, if you say, Earl, come on, go to Paris with me, I'll probably get on the plane with you because I already had a good time where I am. And so the Course is saying the same thing. When you see the peace that you have right here, right now, through listening and following God, of course you'll be ready to go to the next level of joy beyond this. I said, that makes sense to me. Show me how to have happiness right here. It's Earl Purdy. And I'd be much more prone to say, okay, what's the next level, God? And that's what the book is saying. Well, in order for you to have happiness as Earl Purdy, you're going to have to do what? Change your focus. And I'm going to show you how to do that.
Here.
And that's what this section is.
In this world.
In this world. You don't have to die to be happy. It's not on the other side of death. It's right where you are. It's right where I am. It's right here. It's right now. This is the only time there is, brother. This is it. As long as I've been alive, I've always had a now. How about you?
Yeah.
Just the only thing I've ever had since I've been born is a now and a me. Hasn't there always been a now and a you? Maybe not everybody else, but hasn't there been a now and a you? Have you noticed that you are always there? And have you noticed, if you'll be honest, that you're the same you were when you were 6 years old? It just seems like the outer has changed around you, including your body, and you just had more experiences and memories. So they call that maturity and aging. But if you would be honest with yourself, you're the same person that was peeping out these eyes when you were 10 years old, looking at that, going past the mirror going, how did you get in my house? Who are you? You know? Who we are is permanent. It's eternal. When you leave your body, guess what? You will still be here. You just repot it. Death is being repotted. No, you can be repotted is good too. I want to be repotted soon. It's not, you know what I'm saying? Okay, since I'm up 8 o'clock, so I want to bring this plane in for a landing. So please forgive me for saying you're unlimited, wonderful beings that deserve to be happy no matter what. Please forgive me for telling you that you could change your focus and see everything that you ever really wanted in your life. Please forgive me for telling you that you're not going to have a different life until you change what you focus on. Please forgive me for saying you're innocent no matter what you do, which is a good thought, right? We like to hear that. The problem I have with it is I don't want that to be true for certain other people. And that's why I don't like that statement. I like the idea that Earl is innocent no matter what he does. And I love the idea that Earl should be forgiven for his mistakes. But what you do is a sin that you should never be forgiven for and you should be punished, you know, good dog. And because of that, I don't want this innocent stuff to be true if it's going to pardon you. See, I don't want this to be true if it's going to pardon you. I would rather suffer than for you to be forgiven. That's what the Course is saying, that the ego mind does. I'd rather stay in hell than to see you as innocent. Because I think somehow by seeing you as innocent is giving you permission to do the same thing again that caused me harm. And I don't realize that the reason why you did the thing that caused me harm was a combination of my guilt and your guilt. So the guiltier I make you feel, the more I'm increasing the possibility you're going to do it again. But I don't realize that because the world doesn't teach that. The world doesn't teach you that the thing you feel guilty about is the thing you're most likely to do again. Do you know that? Of course you do. How many things have you swore you were never going to do again because it made you feel guilty and you found yourself right back in the throes of it? All of us have had that a million times. If feeling guilty made us stop doing things, all of us wouldn't be doing 90% of the things we do. It's because we feel guilty that we're so attracted to it.
That goes for chocolate sundae, too.
Oh, yeah. Oh, okay, I feel guilty, so the way I'm punishing myself is eating the chocolate sundaes, I'm going to gain 10 pounds. That's the price I'm going to pay for eating the chocolate candy. That's my punishment for eating the chocolate candy, which would make it okay for me to eat some more chocolate candy because I can then add 10 more pounds to pay for that. If I let go of the guilt, I could eat the chocolate candy and not gain weight.
Really?
Because there's no need to punish yourself for eating the chocolate candy, which would then put the chocolate candy in the proper perspective, which means it would be okay if you ate chocolate candy, it would be okay if you didn't eat chocolate candy. The minute the guilt is gone, it would be okay if you do it and okay if you don't do it. And that's why you wouldn't gain the weight. But when there's guilt attached, you're addicted. That's how you can tell. When there's guilt attached, you got to eat the chocolate candy. You're trying to do everything you can to make sure you don't eat the chocolate candy because you're so attracted to the chocolate candy for the guilt that it gives you.
So guilt and addiction go together.
Guilt is addiction. Addiction is guilt.
Really?
Yes. They're the same thing. So think about it. Just don't try to, in other words, don't try to be abstract about this. Don't try to be metaphysical about this. Just look at your own physical experience. How many people that you know have addictions and also seem to have a lot of guilt about things?
Yeah.
Every time you'll go, the exact same person. If you be honest, you'll go, this is the exact same person. And how many people have you ever met that truly feel happy and truly feel innocent that you've seen addictions in? And you have to be in your honest to go, none. There's a point to that. There's a point to that. You'll never let go of the addiction because you feel guilty about smoking. You'll let go of the smoking when you stop feeling guilty about it. So how do I do that? I set the goal not to smoke. Well, how am I going to not smoke? Well, I got to focus on not smoking. I got to focus on the benefits of not smoking. I got to focus on everything about it that is better than it. If I focus on what's better than it, it'll take me right past it and I won't even pay any attention to it. Because my focus is on what's beyond smoking. And I don't have a judgment on people smoking, me personally. You know, I think we just pick out different illusions to pick on. Well, they're all equally crazy. You know what I'm saying? So the one that's not popular now is smoking. You know what I'm saying? But 90% of the things we do in this world kill the body. And so we just choose the one. And it's going to be, and then the person who doesn't have any problem with not smoking is the person that don't want to smoke in the first place. You know what I'm saying? So the person that does, they need your compassion. It's no sweat for you not to smoke. So it's easy for you to be high and mighty about it. You know, I can always be high and mighty about the thing I'm not being tempted to do in the first place. But what I really need to acknowledge myself about is something I've decided not to do that I know I had a tendency to want to do before, but now I'm choosing not to. You know what I'm saying? It doesn't impress me if people can practice the spiritual truth on me when I tell them my problem. You know what I'm saying? If I tell you my problem, you tell me all the spiritual truths about how I could deal with it, I'm not impressed by that because it's not your problem. Anybody could be high and conscious and peaceful about my problem. You know, so that doesn't mean, you know what impressed me, Michael? It's when you have something happen to you that's absolutely a trip, and then I watch you apply that truth to your situation. Now I'm impressed. You see what I mean? And those people don't do that. The same person that will tell you to get over it because it's an illusion will be the same person when something happens to them, be freaking out and want everybody to get involved with their problem. The very same person. So, you know, if you go out with somebody, don't pay attention to how they treat you. Pay attention to how they treat the waiter, how they talk about the person they were with before you, how they talk about their coworkers, because that's how they're revealing to you how they're going to treat you when you're no longer special if you don't act out their script. But don't be fooled by how they're treating you while they're trying to impress you. You know, don't believe anything that they're saying to you. Pay attention to what they are. Because that speaks much louder than their words. I swear it does. Don't pay attention. They're going to say anything that they think is going to get them what they're trying to get by being with you. That's elementary relationship 101. Everybody ought to know that. But nobody can be on guard all the time, so all you have to do is just be there, observe, listen, ask questions, and see how they react to their environment. And now you know how they're going to treat you. Now you really know how they're going to treat you. But our specialness fools us so much that we tell ourselves, yeah, they might have done somebody else like that, but they're not going to do me like that because I'm special. You know, it's like, oh, my God. But if you talk to the person and they say, you know, I did have a relationship and it didn't work out, but the truth is, you know, there were some things in there that I need to take a look at, and that basically was a really cool person, but, you know, it just didn't work out. I wish it had her, and I really wish them well. Now, that's somebody you might want to check out. But if they go, oh, you can't believe what they did to me. It's not, I'm telling you, you don't have to be psychic. You just have to listen.
I was always talking.
Always. Oh, one of the best things I heard in the seminar that I went to, they say, are you trying to be interesting or are you trying to be interested? You know, you when you go on a date, be interested. Don't go on a date trying to be interesting. Trying to figure out what you can do to impress. You know, see, listen, be present with that person. Listen to what they're saying. Be there with them. Be 100% with them. And if there's a person in your life right now that's giving you hell, if that's all you see is hell, that's all you're focusing on is hell, and so that's what you're going to experience. So what should you do? The first thing you need to do is break that focus. How do I break that focus? Well, I break that focus by asking to see something in that person beyond what I'm looking at, and then as much as I can, spend time with other people. And spend time doing other things. That's how you break the focus. Unless you want to suffer. If you want to suffer, you're going to still keep your focus on that person, even though you have other options. And I want you to be happy. Okay? It's 8:11. I got to stop. Let me do the love offering. Yeah. Yeah. You said thank you. Thank you for telling me thank you.
Did we say you over thank tomorrow?
I'd just be happy for any love offering at all. Really.
Earl, I want to tell you that this high, because I can't figure out after class why I'm so high.
Uh-huh.
You know, and the high lasts about 2 days.
Well, did you have a what you had when you came in?
Yeah.
I'm just joking.
You know, so if
I don't know nobody here has ever done drugs. Huh?
If I can get a class about every 2 days, I'm cool. I can keep going.
That's true.
Another thing I'd like to ask you to do is, try to refrain from condemning people who are still doing what you used to do.
Yeah.
Stop condemning people for doing what you used to do. That's another big error that I see people make all the time. You used to smoke pot, so now you're condemning everybody to smoke pot. You used to drink, now you're condemning everybody who drinks. You used to eat meat, now you're condemning everybody. Because in doing that, you are condemning yourself. You're condemning yourself. And not only that, you are pretty much guaranteeing you're going to draw people to you constantly who do those things.
Yeah.
I'm telling you. They're going to be right in your face until you learn how to stop judging. That's why they're going to keep showing up in your face. So when you condemn something, you're setting up the lesson for yourself of having to go beyond that, which means that means you're going to draw those very people into your life so you can learn how to stop condemning. So if you really don't want to be around something, stop condemning the people that do it, especially if you used to do it. Especially if you used to do it, because in my experience, the ones who are the most judgmental are the ones who used to do it themselves, not the people who've never done it. It's always the people who have, gave themselves horrible experiences, and so afraid of doing it again that they think the way to make sure they don't do it again is to condemn everybody else who does, which draws the very temptation into their life that they're trying not to give in to. That makes for misery. So please, please, please stop condemning your own past, 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 stop condemning your own past. Stop condemning your own past. Please stop condemning yourself. Please. Please. Don't ask for punishment for yourself. You don't deserve it, you don't deserve it, you don't deserve it. You just deserve love. That's all you deserve. That's it. It's it. I'm scared. I'm kidding. Okay, so Sunday at 1 and Wednesday.
Thank you.
Okay, Wednesday at 12 noon, we're going to have the next class. And so hopefully you come to the 11 o'clock service. We have a great one here. And I love you and I appreciate you.
Where's your book?
It's over here. And I'll see you the next time. Thank you for staying over a few minutes. 11 o'clock service on Sunday? Mm-hmm. You're welcome to come to that, and then I got the class at 1 o'clock.